Do you wish to quit, Orc? Asked Pox. Have I endangered your soft hide too much? It was the worst insult she knew, for Ardheel had told her that the Orc's name for themselves meant iron skins. The Orc glared at her, baring its fangs and running a tongue around its mouth, which was stained with her own blood. Pox spared a quick glance to see where she was, nearly in front of the spider's web, not where she wanted to be at all. She slid sideways in a crouching glide. The Orc turned to follow her, more slowly this time. She led it around the arena until its back was to the spider. By then, the Orc was beginning to grin again. She watched how it moved, decided where to strike. Suddenly, she stood at full height and stretched her arms upward, like someone just arising from a comfortable sleep. As she expected, the Orc darted in and aimed a vicious slash at her exposed torso. She sidestepped left, taking the force of the blow without pausing, and rammed her suddenly lowered right arm into the Orc's neck. She had shifted the knife blade in that instant to a side hold, and it slashed his throat from side to side, catching edge on in the neck bone. The Orc fell, blood pouring over her arm as she tried to free the blade. Above her, the silvery voices clamored for an instant and were still. Pox rolled the dead Orc on his back and levered the knife free. It had a notch where the bone had chipped it. She crouched, looking up at the circle of faces as she tried to catch her breath. "Well, enough," called the caped Inissi from above the spider's lair. "It might have been done with more artistry, but the final stroke was admirable. Continue to amuse us so, and you may yet survive. For your next trial, you may keep the knife you have earned. For now, stand against the wall." He gestured to the wall behind her. Already the entrance to the arena was filled with heavily armed Inissin. They fanned out around her and forced her back with their pikes. She could not have touched them with the knife, and did not resist. She watched as two of them dragged the Orc's body across the spider's web and bowed as they placed it just beneath the lowest strands. With horrible quickness, the vast, bloated body came down and grasped the corpse, the huge abdomen bending around it so that Pox could see cords of silk from the spinnerets twisting around and around. Soon the Orc was a neatly cased packet hanging in the web. Pox swallowed against a surge of nausea. So that's what would happen if she failed. She thrust that thought aside hurriedly. "Holy gird," she thought. "Just help me fight." As the battle anger left her, she began to tremble. She was terribly thirsty. The Orc bite on her leg throbbed. The whip welts spread a cloak of pain about her. She wondered again how long she had been underground. Surely they knew she was gone. Surely Amberian would come looking for her. Her vision blurred, and she leaned on the wall behind her. She had not noticed that the pike-bearing Inissin were gone until the caped one spoke again. "I hope that is not weakness we see," came the silvery voice. "Surely such a champion does not think the trial is over after a trifling skirmish like that? No, no. We must see more of your far-famed skills. Even now your opponents approach. Do not disappoint us." Pox ran her tongue around her dry mouth. How could she fight again without water or rest? She forced herself to straighten, to look toward the entrance tunnel. "Get out in the open," she told herself. "You've got to have room." She had stiffened, even with that brief respite, and now she limped on the bitten leg. "I have to keep fighting," she thought. "I have to." Out of the dark entrance came two Orcs, this time armed with short swords and shields. "Holy gird," she repeated to herself. "I can't fight two of them, two swords, with only a notched knife." But Saigar's words, spoken long ago in Arrhenius, trickled into her memory. "The enemy's weapon is your weapon if you can take it. Two swords. If I can get one, then it's one to one. Even a shield will help." As the Orcs came forward, she edged back to the wall. Until she got one of them down or disarmed, she wanted something at her back. She noticed that these two did not seem as eager as the first. One of them held its sword awkwardly. A trick? She waited, and let them come to her, heedless of the Inissin catcalls. The taller, more skillful Orc came in on her right hand, her knife hand. The other edged to her left. Again she noticed that this one held the sword like a stick. The tall one thrust at her. She parried the thrust with a knife, thankful for her long arms. From the corner of her eye, She saw the small orc rush, sword extended stiffly. Pox leaped back to the wall, slamming against it, and grabbed the awkward one's wrist. The orc fell forward as Pox jerked, and she caught a glimpse of a terrified face under the helmet. This one's no fighter, she thought. She dug her thumb into the pressure point, and the orc's sword hand opened. Pox reached for the sword as the taller orc aimed a slash at her over the struggling body of its partner. She ducked. The orc she was fighting tried to slam the edge of its shield into her arm, but she had the sword hilt, as well as her knife, in her right fist. She kicked the orc, hard, and danced back to the wall, switching the knife to her left hand. A surge of triumph gave her momentary strength. That would show them. The tall orc howled at her and charged, trying to force her sideways into the other one. The shorter orc tried to move in, staying low. Pox slid sideways along the wall, countering the furious thrusts and slashes as well as she could. She felt herself slowing. Exhaustion clouded her vision. Only the reflexes developed under hours of Saiger's instruction kept her blade between the orc's sword and her body. She had the reach of him, but she could not get past his shield. She tried to force him back with quick thrusts of her own, but failed. The other orc closed in again, this time grabbing at her knife hand. Pox aimed a kick at the orc's knee, but it snatched at her foot and threw her off balance. Pox fell heavily on her side, trapped close under the wall. Just over her, the taller orc's blade clanged into the wall. She stabbed at his feet with her knife, rolling toward him to get inside his stroke. Again he missed her. This time, his blade landed on the shoulder of the smaller orc, who was trying to grapple with Pox's legs. The little orc screeched and sat back. Pox jerked her legs into a curl and launched herself straight up at the tall orc. She had both blades inside his shield. The sword rammed through his body armor into his belly, and the knife slid into his neck. Before Pox could free the blades, she felt a weight hit her back, and a strong arm wrapped around her neck. Then the smaller orc's teeth met in her shoulder. Pox threw herself backwards. The orc grunted as it hit the ground, but did not lose its grip with hand or teeth. Pox saw its other hand groping toward the sword the tall orc had dropped. She swiveled, pushing hard with her legs to get the orc out of reach of that blade. Her own knife was free, but the sword stuck fast in the dead orc's belly. She felt herself weakening, her left arm useless with that grip on her shoulder. The orc began to heave up from underneath. If it once got on top, she would have no chance. Pox shifted her grip on the knife and struck back over her shoulder, feeling for the orc's eyes. She felt its jaws loosen, even before the screams, and stabbed again. Then she raked the knife along the arm around her throat, feeling for the tendons. The grip softened. Pox worked the knife deep into the orc's elbow and twisted. The grip was gone. She rolled quickly and thrust into the orc's throat, trying not to look at its face. She tried to push herself up from the dead orc. I must get that sword, she thought. I must be ready. But her breath came in great gasps, and she could not see. She felt herself slipping into nothingness and fell back across the orc's body. With her last scrap of consciousness, she tried to call on Gerd, but the name rang in her head, empty of meaning. She woke in a cell. Whether the first or another like it, she could not have said. A torch burned in a corner bracket. By its light, she saw a pitcher, mug, and platter near her. Her wounds smarted, as if they'd been salted, but the bleeding had stopped, and she felt much stronger. She reached for the pitcher, then paused. Someone had said something about the danger of taking any food or drink from the Inisin. Or was that something from a child's tale she'd heard long ago? She tried to lick her dry lips, but her tongue was swollen and sore. If she had to fight again, she would have to drink something, and if they poisoned her, she would not have to worry. She shook her head and winced at the pain. Was she thinking straight? But she had to be able to fight. Gerd honored fighters. She was going to die here, almost certainly, but she had to fight. She took the pitcher and looked into it, but in that green light, she could not tell what the liquid was. She poured it out, her hands shaking. Whatever it was, she thought, it was still liquid. She raised the mug to her lips, sniffing, but the torch stank so much she could smell nothing else. She took a swallow. It burned her throat all the way down, but she wanted more of it. She drained the mug. On the platter was a slab of some dried meat and a hunk of bread. Her stomach knotted, reminding her of the hours since she'd eaten. The bread was hard and tasted salty and sour. The meat was salty, too, Not until she'd eaten most of it did she think what the salt would do. Thirst swamped all other sensation. She drained the pitcher at one draught, only to find that it gave strength without easing her thirst. She felt the burning liquid work its way along her body, stinging it awake. She was afire all over, with thirst and the wounds and that terrible itching she had felt since the first. She found herself growling softly. Fight, she thought. Oh, I will fight. By holy gird, I will fight exceedingly. She thought of the combat past, the unfairness of it, the knotted whip, the orc's teeth in her leg, her strokes, the orc's strokes. For a moment, she grimaced at the thought of the last encounter, when she had stabbed the orc's eyes, but she forced the revulsion down. I had to, she thought. It wasn't fair, I was outnumbered. I had to do whatever. She drew grimness around her like a cloak. Gird of the cudgel, she thought. If that's what you want, putting me in a place like this, that's what I'll do. I'll fight. Protector of the helpless, strong arm of the High Lord, I will be true. I will fight. But a moment of doubt had her frowning. Gird was not for fighting only. She thought she remembered that. Fairness, truth. She shook her head, trying to think. She seemed to see Stammel's face, telling the recruits not to brawl. Then the look he had given her in the cell when Cedric had banned her. Something was wrong. She should know something better. But of course something's wrong, she thought irritably. I've been taken by a Nissen. I had to fight 3 orcs unarmed. The stuff they gave me was poisoned. When she heard scraping outside the door, she sprang to her feet, a little surprised at her body's quick response. She felt ready, even eager, for what was to come. They wanted to see fights, did they? She would show them fighting such as they had never seen. I see you have recovered from your shameful collapse. The caped Inissi entered the cell. It flicked a glance down at the pitcher and platter. Ah, refreshed yourself, have you? I fear you may find our ale a bit thirst-provoking, don't you? But it is strengthening, and if you are successful this next trial, we might give you water as a reward. What do you think, eh? Pox felt her lips draw back in an involuntary snarl. The Inissi laughed. I suppose we must not expect to find fighters courteous, he said. But how you humans do reveal your needs, it is a weakness of yours, which the elder races have learned to control. The Inissi snapped his fingers, and an attendant brought forward the box from which he took another hank of the grey stuff. "'Tis a pity this is necessary,' he said. "'If we had your word that you would cause no trouble, no?' "'Discourteous. Perhaps we shall have to teach you manners as well. Hold out your hands, and pray that I remember to cut the bond before your combat begins.' Pox found that she had extended her hands without thinking about it, nor could she jerk them back when she tried. She wondered if the Inissi used a spell, a ring, surely something to control her. As before, she was led into the small arena. This time the seats were full when she came in. A sword, dagger, shield, and helmet were stacked in the center. You earned these last time, said the Inissi. Possibly the body armor as well, but we differed on that. Convince us if you can. The combat that followed was a whirling confusion that was never after clear in Pox's memory. How many she fought. In that bout or another, or what arms they had, she could not say. Only that she fought at the limit of her strength and skill again and again. She had no memory of individual strokes, how she won, or what wounds she took. When she won, she was rewarded with a dipper of water, a short rest, a weapon to replace one that had shattered. When she collapsed, of wounds and exhaustion, and she did not know how many times or how often that happened, she would awake in a cell, her wounds no longer bleeding, but afire with whatever had been used to treat them. She was given food and drink that did nothing to ease her hunger and thirst, but gave her strength to fight once again. Soon she could think of nothing but the opponent at hand, the weapon that menaced her, the hands that wielded it. For a long time she tried to call on Gird before each onset, but she could never bring the name out aloud. At last, it drifted from her mind while she lay unconscious between encounters. She fought grimly then to the shrill squeals of the watching Inissin and their allies, and never knew what she fought or how. There was only pain and danger and the bitter anger that kept fear at bay. That anger grew after every bout. It spread to include all she thought of. The High Lord should never have made the world to include Ainissin, she thought bitterly, and if elves could turn so to evil, he should not have made elves. Now the distrust of true elves the Ainissin had sown flowered in bitterness. She remembered the elf lord laired deep under stone, bound to some power of evil and drawing her to his side with irresistible enchantments. Messenian's lies, his greed and cowardice with a snow cat, his arrogance. Even at their best, elves toyed with humans, clouded human memory for their convenience, sent them into dangers they could not assess, with that glamour upon them. Were a few tinkling songs and flowery compliments in a sweet voice a fair exchange for all this disdain of human lives and needs? Hardly. In a world where such evil existed, it ill behooved elves to sit aside and cast human lives like dice for their pleasure. It was monstrous that such evil existed, that innocents were tormented in dark places, that she was alone and helpless and frightened. But she wasn't frightened, she reminded herself. Death was the end of all things, and darkness surrounded all light, but she was no child to be frightened of what must come. If Gerd wouldn't help, or didn't exist, she would get along without him. She would fight until the end, and then grapple death itself. That would show them. When she thought at all of her friends, in bits and scraps of memory, she saw them standing idly in the sunlight while she was fighting against impossible odds underground. She had an image of Arnie and Vic, chatting peacefully in Duke Phelan's barracks, of the other paladin candidates, safe in Finn Paneer, looking forward to their own tests, of the rest of the expedition, feasting around a fire, leaving her behind with a shrug. For a while, she knew this was untrue. She reminded herself that her friends were better than that. But in the end, that truth slipped away as well. They would find out, she thought grimly, and enjoyed imagining their grief and their pride in her deeds. And if they never knew, that might even be better. She was no longer angry with them. They could not understand. It was not their fault. It was their weakness. All those silly thoughts of right and wrong, the rules made for gentler combats. If they had been where she was, they would know that only the fight itself mattered. The enemy's death. The anger sated by blood. She awoke, once more in a narrow cell, to find the caped Ainissi standing over her. She blinked, still under the influence of the healing methods they used. He beckoned one of his henchmen, who quickly raised her head and held a mug to her lips. She swallowed, the same burning liquid. As always, she wanted more. With every swallow, strength flowed back into her. She gulped down two mugsful before he moved away, then she rolled easily to her feet. "You have given us good sport, Paxanarian," said the Ainissi. "Such sport that we are minded to reward you greatly. You remember your friends, don't you? Your friends outside?" Pox felt her forehead wrinkle as she tried to remember. Friends. Yes, she had friends somewhere. She could not remember their names, but she had friends. She nodded. "Your good friends," he coaxed. "Such good friends." Pox felt a surge of anger. Why was he being so tedious? "Your friends are worried about you. They have come to find you, to free you." Pox growled, then stumbled over the words. "Can free myself, can fight." The Ainissi smiled. "Yes, that's right. You can fight, you can free yourself. We will let you fight, Paxanarian. Just one more fight, and you will be free. You will be with your friends." Suddenly Pox's mind cleared for an instant. She seemed to see Amberian, Ardheel, and the marshals before her. Those were her friends. Were they here? Mingled worry and hope rose in her. She glared at the Ainissi. What did he mean, fight herself free? "Ah, some memory coming back. That is well. Now listen to me. You must fight once more. Fight your way through some of our lesser servants to reach your friends. If you can do this, you may go free. Otherwise, you will die, and so will they. We will arm you in what you have won." Before she could reply, he waved into the cell several Ainissin carrying a suit of black plate armor, a black helmet, crested in black horsehair, and a handsome longsword with a curious design at the cross-hilts. Pox had no time to examine it. The Inisin began to fit the armor on her. She found, as always, that she could not move when the caped one commanded her to stand still. The armor had a strange feel. It made her uneasy. The helmet was even worse. As it neared her head, she felt a sudden loathing for it and tried to duck aside. The effort was hopeless. Down over her head came the helmet, close-fitting around her ears and cheeks. She felt breathless. Someone pulled the visor down. She squinted through the eye slit, but found that everything wavered as if seen through a blowing mist. "I can't see," she said.
"That's all right,"
the Inisi answered. His voice echoed unpleasantly in the helmet. "All down here are your enemies, yes? All are enemies. Here, take the sword." She felt the sword hilt pressed into her right hand. She hefted the blade. It felt good.
"All enemies," said the Inisi's voice, now behind her. "Go, fight. Fight for your rights, Paxenarian. Fight your enemies. Fight."
She hardly needed that encouragement. She was walking down the corridor, away from the cell, walking alone and unguarded for the first time. At first, she could barely see well enough to stay away from the walls, but then her vision cleared a little. She saw Inisin ahead of her, all running somewhere. Those who looked at her screamed and ran faster. Behind the visor, she smiled. Soon, soon she would show them. She was no longer helpless. Now she had the power she had longed for all those dark hours. She wondered which way to go, heard a confused clangor from a wide cross passage, and turned to see what it was. A fight. A big fight. She saw the passage choked with armed figures. Inisin, orcs, others. She drew breath and stalked forward, sword ready. She struck the back of a confused mass, hating the black-clad Inisin who had laughed at her. Wide sweeps of her sword parted heads from shoulders and cleared a space around her. Those in front turned to face her. She leveled the great blade and swiped from side to side, laughing. The black cloaks melted away. Beyond them were greater ones, huge to her eyes. Hatred and anger flared together in her mind. "You too," she thought. "I will fight. I will fight through all of you, whatever you are. Fight through to my friends. By Gerd!" The name leapt into her mind, and she opened her mouth to yell it out loud. This time, at last, the sound passed her lips, not as a yell, little louder than a whisper. "In the name of Gerd!" A vast space opened in her mind, and out of it a voice like stone said, "Stop!" She froze. One arm held the sword up for another swing. One foot had nearly left the ground. At once, she was bereft of vision and hearing, and plunged into darkness. Chapter 26. Pox woke to darkness. She lay a moment, feeling cool air, living air, wash over her face. She lay wrapped in something soft, on something more yielding than stone. She blinked. She could see something glittering overhead. Stars. The current of air quickened. It smelled of pine and horses and wood smoke. She could not think where she was. Her mouth was dry. She tried to clear her throat, but made a strange croaking noise. At once a voice, a human voice, spoke out of the darkness. "Pox, do you want something?" Tears filled her eyes and ran down her face. She could not speak. She heard a rustle of clothing, then a hand came out of darkness and touched her face. "Pox, are you crying? Here." The hand withdrew, and after a sharp scratching noise, a light flared near her and steadied. She thought, "Lamp." Her tears blurred everything to wavering points of light and blackness. The hand returned, a gentle touch, stroking her head. "There, Pox. It's all right. You're safe now. You're free." She could not stop the tears that kept flowing. She began to tremble with the effort, and the person beside her called softly to someone else. Another person loomed beside her.
The spell's going, I think, said the first voice.
About time, too. Can she speak yet?
No, but she's aware. I hope we can get her to drink. She's as dry as old bone.
I'll lift her. The second person slipped an arm under her shoulders. Pox felt herself shift as she was lifted to lean against a leather tunic.
There now, Pox. You need to drink something here.
She felt a cool rim at her lips and sipped. It was water, cold and clean. She swallowed again and again.
Good, said the voice. That's what you need.
I'll get more, said the first voice, and she heard the rasp of footsteps. She drank another flaskful. Tears still ran from her eyes. She did not know who these people were, or where she was, or what had happened, only that it was better now. At last, she slipped back into sleep, still crying. She woke in daylight. Light blue sky overhead, red rocks against the sky. She turned her head. She lay on a sandbank, above a stream. She could see horses across the stream, and men in chainmail grooming them. Nearer was the pale flickering light of a campfire. Around it were three men, a woman, and a dwarf. One of the men and the woman left the campfire and came toward her. They were smiling. She wondered why.
Pox.
Are you feeling better this morning? That was the woman. Pox felt her way along the words, trying to understand.
This morning.
Did that mean that it was last night, the voices and the crying?
Better?
She tried to roll up on one elbow, but found she could hardly move. She felt utterly weak, as if she were hollow from the bones out.
Can you speak at all, Pox?
Asked the man. She looked at him, dark hair with a few silver threads, short, dark beard, chainmail under a yellow tunic. They wanted her to say something. She had nothing to say. They were smiling at her, both of them. She looked from face to face. The man's smile faded as she watched.
Pox, do you know who I am?
She shook her head.
Do you know where you are?
Again the head shake.
Do you know who you are?
Pox? She answered softly, tentatively.
Do you know your full name?
Pox thought a long moment. Something seeped into her mind.
Pox. Pox. Poxenarian, I think.
The man and woman looked at each other and sighed.
Well, said the woman, that's something.
How about breakfast, Pox?
Breakfast,
she repeated slowly. Are you hungry? Again Pox thought her way to the meaning of the words.
Hungry?
Her stomach rumbled, answering for her.
Food,
she murmured. Fine, said the woman, I'll bring it. She strode off. Pox looked at the man.
Who is that?
She asked. The woman?
Pier. She's a knight.
His voice held slight coolness.
Should I know her?
Yes, but don't worry about that. Do you remember anything of what happened? Pox shook her head before answering.
No, I don't remember anything much. Did I do something bad?
Not that I know of. What makes you ask that?
I don't know.
Pox turned her head to look the other way. She was looking up a narrow valley or canyon walled with red rock on both sides. Nothing looked familiar. The woman returned, carrying a deep bowl that steamed, a mug, and a water skin slung from one wrist.
Here.
Stew, bread, and plenty of water. Can you sit up? Pox tried, but again was too weak. The man propped her against a pack he dragged from a few feet away. The woman set the bowl on the sand, poured water into the mug and offered it. Pox tried to wiggle a hand free from the blanket around her, but the woman had to help her even with that. When she took the mug, her hand shook so that much of the water slopped onto her face and neck. It was icy cold, but what she managed to drink refreshed her. I'll help you with a stew, said the woman. You're too shaky to manage it. She offered it spoonful by spoonful,
Pox ate, at first without much interest, but with increasing relish. She began to feel more alert. A thread of memory returned, though she could not tell if it was recent or remote. She looked at the man.
"Is this Duke Phelan's camp?"
His face seemed to harden. "No. Do you remember Duke Phelan?"
"I think so. He was not so tall as you, red hair. Yes, I thought I was still in his company, but I'm not. I don't think so. Am I?"
"Not anymore, no. But if you remember that, then your memory is coming back. That's good."
"But where? I should know you, shouldn't I? You asked me that, and I don't know you, any of you. Or this."
Her voice began to shake. "Take it easy, Pox. It will come back to you. You're safe here." The man turned away for a moment and waved to someone Pox could not see.
"But when I was with the Duke, I was a soldier. I must have been. And you're wearing mail. What happened?"
Pox tried again to push herself up. This time she got both arms out of the blanket around her. She had on a loose linen shirt. Below its sleeves, her arms were seamed with the swollen purple lines of healing wounds. Her wrists were bandaged with strips of linen. She stared at them, and then at the man.
"What is this place? Did you—"
He reached out and took her hand. His grip was firm but gentle.
"No, Pox.
I did not deal those injuries. We brought you out of the place where that happened." He turned to another man, who had just walked up to them.
"She's awake, and making sense, but her memory hasn't returned. Pox, do you know this man?"
Pox stared at the lean face, framed in iron-gray hair and beard. He looked stern, and even grim, but honest. She wanted to trust him. She could not remember him at all.
"No, sir,"
she said slowly.
"I don't. I'm sorry."
"Don't apologize," said the second man. "I wonder," he said to the first, "whether we should try to tell her what we know."
"Names, at least," said the dark man, "or she'll be completely confused. Pox, my name is Ambirion. I'm a paladin of Gerd, and this is Marshal Fallas, of the Order of the Cudgel." The names meant nothing to Pox, and the men looked no more familiar with strange names attached. She looked from one to the other.
"Ambirion, Marshal Fallas."
They looked at her, glanced at each other, then back at her.
"Do you remember who Gerd is, Pox?"
asked Marshal Fallas. Pox wrinkled her brow, trying to think. The name woke a distant uneasiness.
"Gerd. I know I should. Something. It's what to do, to call when—"
She stopped, breathing hard, and tried again.
"When you start to fight, only I couldn't say it aloud. I tried, and it wouldn't. Something on my neck, choking. No!"
Pox shouted this last loud enough to startle the entire camp. She'd shut her eyes tightly, shaking her head, her body rigid.
"No,"
she said more softly.
"No, by holy Gerd, I will fight. I will not stop. I will fight."
She felt both men's hands on her shoulders, steadying her. Ambirion spoke.
"Pox, listen to me. You're out of that. You're safe."
Then more quietly to Fallas.
"And what do you suppose that was about? Surely she wasn't free to fight them."
"I don't know," was Fallas's grim reply. "But I suspect we'd better find out, considering how we found her."
"I won't believe it,"
said Ambirion, but his voice had thinned. Pox opened her eyes. For a moment she stared blankly at the sky, then shifted her eyes to look at Ambirion. She could feel patches of memory coming back, unconnected still, but broadening.
"Ambirion? What?"
"You were injured, Pox. You don't remember much."
"I feel strange. Will you tell me what happened?"
"We don't know all that happened, and it might be better to let you remember it for yourself."
Pox looked around.
I don't recognize this place, but the color of the rocks, something, is familiar.
We moved the camp after you... after the fight.
Are we in Kolobia yet?
Pox saw Amberian's face relax a little.
Good.
You are remembering. Yes, we're in Kolobia. How much do you remember of the trip here?
Some of it. We were in a caravan for a long way. We saw the horse nomads, didn't we?
Amberian nodded.
And I remember a bald-faced red horse bucking.
That's my war horse, said Follis. Do you remember why we were coming to Kolobia?
Pox shook her head.
No. I wish I didn't feel so peculiar. Did something hit my head? Was it a battle?
Follis smiled at her. You've been in several battles. Both on the caravan and here as well. I think you'll remember them on your own when you've rested more. Your wounds are healing well. Do you need anything more?
Water, if there's enough.
Certainly. The marshal walked away and returned with a full water skin. He set it beside Pox. Then he and Amberian walked upstream, looking at the cliffs on the far side. Pox managed to get the water skin to her mouth. She took a long drink, then looked around again. The dwarf was looking her way, talking to the woman. When he caught her eye, he rose and came toward her. She tried to think of his name.
Good morning, Lady Paxanarian, said the dwarf.
His voice was higher and sweeter than she'd expected. She wondered how she knew what to expect.
How fare you this day?
I'm all right, a little confused.
That is no wonder. Perhaps even names have escaped you. I am Balkan of the House of Golden Axe.
The name fit. Pox could almost think she remembered it. As she looked at the dwarf, the distant, silent scraps of memory came nearer and seemed to fuse in his face.
Yes,
she said slowly.
Master Balkan, you came with us from Finn Panir. You know about rock, where it will be solid or weak. You are a cousin of the Golden Axe himself, aren't you?
Eighth cousin twice removed, said the dwarf with a smile. I think you must be recovering very swiftly. We are glad it should be so, who saw you in such dismay.
Dismay?
Pox felt a twinge of fear. The dwarf's face constricted into a mass of furrows, and then relaxed.
Is that not the correct term? You must excuse me, Lady Pox. I have not the skill in wordcraft, as were I an elf. Dismay, distress, dis... Oh, I cannot find the word. Plague, take it. But you were much hurt by those black hearts, and that your friends sorrowed to see, and you are now much better, and we are glad.
Thank you, Master Balkan, said Pox.
She did not understand what he was talking about exactly, but his kindness was welcome.
I wanted to ask you, if it will not be too great a sorrow to speak of it, what those rock filth used on your injuries.
Pox stared at him.
Rock filth?
They corrupt the very stone, good stone, by living in its heart. Those black heart elf cousins, I mean, who took you.
Took me?
Pox shook her head as a sudden chill ran over her.
I have no memory of such a thing, Master Balkan.
Ah, magics, then.
The dwarf muttered rapidly in dwarvish. Pox caught only one or two words. He stopped abruptly and looked sharply at her.
You remember none of it at all?
None of what?
Pox began to feel a prickling irritation. Everyone else knew something about her, but wouldn't tell what it was. It was unfair. She glared at the dwarf.
Tech, be still. That Lord Amberian, your paladin, and the Marshal Follis, they will not have told you too much, foreseeing what you shall remember in time. Do you make noise? They will come to see what we speak.
Will you tell me?
Asked Pox, with rising excitement. The dwarf smiled, a sly sideways smile.
And should I say what such men of power want not to be said? I am no prince or lord to rank myself above them, but they did not say to me what not to say. It is a point on which it is possible to differ, so...
He looked at her again.
I will say what I think should be said, as it would be done in the House of Golden Axe.
Pox forced herself to lie still, remembering this much about dwarves, that they cannot be hurried in the telling of anything. The dwarf pulled out his curved pipe, packed it, lit it, and drew a long breath. He blew three smoke rings.
Very well, then, he said, as if he had not paused. You were taken by those Blackheart worshippers of Akria.
He spat after saying that name.
Such as elves, like Ardheel, do not like to admit exist and are of elvish origin. Despite having their own word for them, that was when they attacked our camp, the second night in this canyon, and they carried you away down their lairs under that cliff yonder.
He jerked his head to indicate the cliff across the stream.
And there they held you some days. We know not what befell you in that dark place, save the marks you carry. Dire wounds enough, they must have been, to deal such marks. We had some trouble to follow your path and find you. Do you truly remember nothing of this?
Pox had been listening in rising horror. She stared at the cliff, the rust-red and orange rocks streaked with black, and shook her head.
I don't remember. Yet as you talk, something comes back, like seeing a valley from a hill, far away and hazy.
That will be the magics, I don't doubt, or the knocks on your head that left such lumps. Well then, when we found you, that was a strange thing, too. We had fought several times in the dark ways, and came to another band of the enemy. None of us knew what was that black warrior so tall behind the others, all in black armor. You, but we did not know then it was you. We're killing them, the ones we faced, and when they parted seemed like to kill us too. Then...
He paused, to puff on his pipe and blow more rings. Pox waited impatiently, a feeling of pressure swelling her head.
Then, Lady Poxenarian, you were still all at once, sword arm so above your head. Very strange indeed. Lord Ambirion and Marshal Fallis went to look, being careful, too, for any treachery. Then they lifted the visor of the helmet, and a nasty, evil thing that was, that I could sense from where I stood, and there was your face behind it, pale as cheese, and your eyes seeing nothing. All that bad armor was magics, enchanted. Your paladin and marshal had their way with Gerd. It split, finally, lying around you like a beetle's wing cases. Then it shriveled and was gone. But that wasn't all. Around your neck.
Master Balkan!
Neither Pox nor Balkan had noticed Ambirion's approach. He looked more than a little displeased.
Is this well done? To tax her beyond her knowledge?
Tax her? I but tell her what things are lost to her.
But you knew we thought it wise to tell her nothing.
That you thought it wise, yes. But you never forbade such telling to me, and of the ill-doing of elves and their kindred, we dwarves have more knowledge than those the elves would make their allies. To my wisdom, it seems right that she should not be left to anxious wondering.
Pox felt a wave of irritation that they would talk over and about her as if she were not there.
I asked him, Sir Ambirion, as I asked you, and he chose to think me whole-witted enough to answer me as one fighter to another, not as if I were a witless child.
She surprised even herself with the bitterness in her voice. Ambirion looked at her, brows raised.
Surely, Pox, you realize that we do not think you a child. You, of all people. We were concerned that if we told you what we knew, you might never regain your own memories, which must include much that we cannot know. Have you so forgotten the fellowship of Gerd that you mistrust a paladin this way? It must be your wounds that make you so irritable.
Pox felt herself flush at the mild reproof.
I'm sorry, she muttered, still angry. I was worried.
Her voice trailed away, and she looked beyond Ambirion to the cliffs beyond.
Are you in much pain?
Ambirion went on. Pox realized that she did, in fact, ache all over, as if with a fever. Her head throbbed.
Sir, I do ache some.
He felt her forehead and frowned.
It may be fever, and no wonder with your wounds, yet you feel cold. Let me see what I can do.
He placed a hand on either side of her head and began to speak. Pox felt she should know the words, anticipate the phrases, yet she could hardly concentrate enough to hear them. Her vision hazed. For a few moments, the throbbing in her head merged with her aching body in one vast rhythmic pain. Then it eased.
As it disappeared, she knew how much pain she had felt, and wondered for an instant why she had not known it. Had it been even worse, that she could accept it as normal? Her vision cleared. She felt Amberian's warm palms leave her head. "Does that ease the pain?" he asked. Pox nodded. "Yes, sir. Thank you. I had not realized how much it was." Now her outburst of a few moments before seemed unreasonable to her. She could not understand why she had said such a thing to Amberian. "Good." Amberian sighed and sat beside her, across from the dwarf. He looked tired. "Master Balkan, I heard but the last of what you told her. Was it just the tale of her capture and our pursuit?"
"Aye, it was, and scantly told, at that. I did not speak of the capture itself, since none of us saw it, only that she was taken. Nor did I speak of the debate when she was found missing, or—"
"Well enough," Amberian interrupted. The dwarf scowled at him. "Pox, has any of that come back to you as he was telling it?"
"It seemed, sir, almost as if something were trying to break into my head, something I should know. But as I told Master Balkan, what I do recall seems far away, dreamlike."
"That's not unusual. By Gerd, I wish that elf would wake."
"By his face," said the dwarf sourly. "That one is enjoying some rare dream such as elves delight in, too rare a dream to wake for our need."
"Elf?" asked Pox. "Ardhil," said Amberian, "from the embassy to Fintha." "Oh!" A live memory flashed into Pox's mind. "I remember him, in Finpanir, when we—" She looked at Amberian, then went on more slowly with dawning comprehension. "When we planned this expedition, I remember that now. I was there, I was taking training, and then—" In her excitement, Pox tried to sit up, but could not.
"I'll get another pack for you," said Amberian. He brought a fat blanket roll and propped her higher on it. For an instant she was dizzy, but recovered.
"I do remember," she said eagerly. "On the caravan, and when we turned off, those canyons with a white stone high above, a black hill with a dip in the top. Is this farther down the canyon we went into, the one Master Balkan said was not as deep as it was meant to be?"
"Yes, lady," said the dwarf. "This is the canyon choked with sand. I have not yet had the time to look, but I expect something, some rock fall, perchance, has blocked the downward end."
"And at the high end, that's where the cliffs were that the smoke came from?"
"Yes, in a branch canyon to this one. Do you remember the fight?"
"Something of it. One of those black fighters called out, and it was hard to move after that."
Amberian nodded.
"It affected most of our party, save Master Balkan and me."
"Then you did something. And it eased. They were shooting arrows down. Ardhil and Thelen were shooting back."
"Yes," said Balkan. "And then that black scum who called down the fear on us came down the cliff in the shape of his lady."
The dwarf spat again.
"That one."
"Like a spider," said Pox. "I remember, it was horrible. He just came down the rock, straight down, and then more and more of them swarmed out of holes in the walls, and Ardhil blew that old hunting horn he carries, only it didn't sound like a hunting horn."
"No," said Amberian. "And after he blew it, its own shape returned. It was under some enchantment. It's an elven horn, the only one I've ever seen, and a rare treasure. Whatever or whoever it was who appeared when the horn sang, I know not, but great goodness and power were allied in him."
Pox shook her head. "I don't remember anything but the sound of it."
"Pretty enough," grumbled Balkan. "But I'd like to know what it means."
Amberian stretched and sighed. "It meant trouble for our enemies that day, and a long sleep for Ardhil. Pox, I think your memory will come back. As it does, I'd like to know about it."
She nodded.
"Master Balkan, we still think it would be best to let her recall these things on her own."
"I worry about those wounds," said the dwarf frankly. "The elves have some means of speeding and slowing growth. Something like that must have been used by those rock filth. She'd still be bleeding else. It's dangerous. I would know what was used on her, and would wish you to think what may be done."
He grinned at Pox for an instant, and went on.
Besides that, it is this talk which has brought her memory so far. Surely more would be better.
It is that, said another voice, which distinguishes dwarves from more temperate folk. They always think more is better.
Pox looked over to see a dark man in stained leather clothes. She remembered that this was Thelen, their half-elven scout.
Master Balkan bristled at his words, but Thelen laughed gently and lifted his hand.
My pardon, Master Balkan, but I could not resist. It has been long in this camp since anything seemed funny.
I don't see, began Balkan.
Thelen shook his head then and bowed.
Sir Dwarf, I am sorry. I had no intention of insult. I'll say so before all, and confess a loose tongue.
Balkan shook his head, and finally smiled at Thelen.
You are but half-elven, and a ranger, which is another word for hardy, as we dwarves know, and I confess I am as fond of plenty as you are of enough. Let it pass, Thelen. I will not bear anger to you.
Thelen bowed again.
I thank you for your courtesy. I came to ask Amberion to attend the marshals. Ardiel may be rousing from his sleep, and they asked for you.
Amberion looked sternly at the dwarf as he rose.
Master Balkan, we are as concerned as you, but if Pox doesn't remember, she can't tell you what they used. It would be better to let it be.
Balkan nodded. If the elf is wakening, he might know far more than I, only he should be told at once, if he can listen.
Then,
I will but bear her company, and no tales tell until you bring word of Ardhil, said the dwarf.
And with that, Amberion had to be content, and he turned away. Pox watched the dwarf, hoping he would resume his talk, but he did not meet her eyes. He poked and puffed at his pipe until the smoke rose steadily. Then he looked at her.
I am not one to break my word, he said fiercely. Even so little of it as that. Bide still, the time will come, and you will hear it all.
Pox slept again, while waiting for Amberion to return, and woke hungry. She was able to feed herself this time. With help, she managed to stand and stagger a short way to the shallow sandpit that served the camp for jacks. But that exhausted her, and she fell into sleep again as soon as she came back to her place. It was evening when she woke, with sun striking the very highest line of the opposite canyon wall. No one was beside her at the moment. She saw the dwarf, hunching over the campfire. Pier stood at a little distance, staring up at the sunlit rock far overhead. Off on her right, Amberion and the marshals stood talking to another taller figure. Pox recognized this as Ardhil, the elf. She stretched, slowly. She felt a vague ache again, not so strong as before, and wondered at it. The only other time she had experienced a paladin's healing, the wound and pain had disappeared at once and forever. Perhaps she'd been lying awry. She pushed up her sleeves to look at the marks on her arms. Ordinarily, she'd have said the wounds were several weeks old. The scar tissue was raised and dark. But the others had said she'd been missing only a few days. She tried to remember what had happened. What Balkan had told her seemed to fit, yet her memories gave no life to his words. Captive. Underground. That almost made sense. But what about the wounds? Had she actually fought? And who had she fought? And how? The marks gave her no clues. They looked like any healing cuts. Could have been given by knife or sword or pike. The only unusual thing about them was the number. More scars than she had collected in 3 seasons of fighting with Duke Phelan. She could not understand how she had fought at all, how she had survived, with so many wounds all given at once. Yet something about them seemed to convey that they'd been given in combat rather than inflicted on a bound and helpless prisoner. Amberian's voice interrupted her thoughts. Pox, I'm glad you're awake again. Ardhil is with us now, and he examined you this afternoon. Pox was suddenly angry. What right had they to stare at her while she lay helpless? She remembered what the Ainissin had told her about the elves who took the Halveric scroll. She fought the anger down, surprised at its strength, and tried to conceal it. She knew they would not understand. Amberion went on. He would like to talk with you if you feel well enough.
Yes, of course, I'm just...
She decided not to mention the aching to Amberion. He would think it weakness.
I'm still confused, she said finally.
Ardhil sat beside her. He seemed thinner than she remembered, but his face was alight with some joy.
Lady Poxenarian, I sorrow that I was not here to defend you. I did not know that when I blew the elven horn I would be carried away.
Carried away?
In spirit. I had always been taught that elves have no souls, that we are wholly one with our bodies. I had no idea that I could be plucked out, like a hazelnut from its shell, and be gone so long. It did not seem long to me, only a day at the High King's court, but when I returned, I find that you have spent many dark hours with the Ainissin.
So they say. Pox looked away, frowning. I can't remember.
Not at all?
Only vaguely. Balkan told me some, and it seemed to make sense. I had the feeling that he was right, as far as he knew, but I don't remember it clearly on my own.
Ah.
Ardhil leaned back on the sand, staring skyward at the glowing blue that deepened as the sun lowered behind distant mountains.
I wish I knew more. We elves prefer to ignore the Ainissin, even to pretend they do not exist, or are not distant kin. But at such times as these, that way is proved dangerous for us and for our allies. I do not know that they have the same magical abilities that we have and share in the powers of those they worship, Akria and Neda, Gitris and Liart.
Pox shuddered as the four evil names seemed to foul the air. A face swam before her, elven, but evil, frightening.
I don't remember, she said.
If it is truly wiped from your mind, by a blow on your head, for example, that is one thing. But if the memory has been blurred by the Ainissin or their deity, then we must do what we can to bring it back. I could not tell this afternoon. I was still half enchanted by my own experience.
Ardhil sat up, stretching.
Amberian, did you want to do this before or after eating?
Do what? Asked Pox, alarmed.
Amberian turned from watching the distant line of mountains and smiled at her. She thought his face looked flat and featureless in the dimming light. He sat on her other side and reached for her hand.
We need to find out what magic the Ainissin used on you, Pox. Surely you realize that. Ardhil and I will each try what we know.
But Pox tried to think of some argument. Isn't it? Didn't you tell me that paladin candidates must not submit to spells?
Amberian frowned.
Usually that's so, but this is a special case. You have already been spelled, we think, by the Ainissin, and you were assigned to my care. Gerd knows, Poxenarian, what I feel, that I did not save you from that capture. But now, we must do what we can for you.
Pox nodded, meeting Amberian's eyes with difficulty. She could tell that he was concerned, even worried. For herself, she felt more annoyance than anything else. In time she would heal, as she always had, and be strong again. The memories would come, or not come. She wanted to hear what they knew, wanted them to trust her enough to tell her, as Kerry and Volya had told her about the sack of Sibylle.
Amberian tells me that these wounds were already so healed when they found you, Poxenarian.
Ardhil laid his long-fingered elven hand on her wrist. Pox tried not to flinch.
You were missing so short a time. Either the wounds were never what they looked like, that is, they were not real wounds, but created in this half-healed state, or they were magically healed.
Pox looked at her arms again. Could they be made that way? I never heard of such.
No, it's not widely known that it can be done, and it would only be done by evil intent. But the other is bad, too. To force flesh to such healing, out of time, that has its own hazards. I have known an elf, long ago in your time, and far from here, who could speed growth and healing. He used the gift on plants only. But animals too could be treated so. What we will do now, Poxenarian, is try to lift the cloud from your memory. If it is what I think it may be, a cloud the Ainissin placed there, you can then remember what you need.
As much as Pox had wanted to know what happened, she still shrank from this. Now that she knew her memories could be made or unmade at elven will, as the Ainissin had shown her, she wanted no more of that. But some doubt of them kept her from mentioning the Holveric scroll. The elf's glowing eyes seemed dangerous as coals. She looked at Amberian.
He nodded. Ardheel has convinced me that this is best, Poxenarian. The Inisin powers should be countered as soon as possible.
Then Balkan was right, she murmured.
Right in his way, said Ardheel. You do need to remember, but you need to remember for yourself. It is this I will try.
Well then, go ahead.
Pox looked from one to the other of them.
What should I do?
Think on Gerd and the High Lord, said Amberian. They will guide your thoughts and your memories, we hope, while we free them.
Pox closed her eyes and lay still. She could not keep from pushing at the dark curtains in her mind, and felt more and more breathless and trapped as she lay there.
She was hardly aware of Ardheel's hand when it moved to her brow, or Amberian's firm grip. Ardheel began chanting something in Elven. She did not even try to follow the meaning. Shadows moved in her mind. Some were darker, some moved away from her, and others menaced her. She saw again an Elven face, pale, against a dark hood. She felt a burning pain at her throat, and tried to raise her hand, struggling. The shadow seemed to harden, thickening into reality. Sounds came, faintly at first, then louder. Shrill cries, mocking laughter, the clatter of weapons. Bitter fluid stung her throat. The stench of it wrinkled her nose. The faces came clearer out of the darkness. Orcs, their fangs bared, their taloned hands holding swords, knives, whips. Other fighters, whose kind she did not know, in armor of leather and plate. The light was green, a sickly shade that turned spilled blood black. Gradually, she was able to remember the bargain the Inisin had made. She had had to fight. Fight for their amusement against opponents of their choosing. Fight with whatever weapons they gave her for the chance to live a little longer. As it had happened, so in the memory Ardheel's treatment roused, she could not remember how long these fights had gone on, or the intervals between them, but she could remember, as if reliving them, the pain of her wounds, the hunger and thirst and exhaustion, the fear that she would never see daylight again, the grim and bitter anger she had summoned against that fear. When Ardheel took his hands away from her brow, she was aware, and the memories she had lost lay in a cold heap in her mind. She hated the thought of them, of stirring through them, but she had no choice. That, too, she resented. She had had no choice with the Inisin, and no choice here. Chapter 27. For of course Amberian insisted on knowing what, if anything, she remembered. She replied as quickly as possible, surprised at her own distaste, with an outline of the Inisin bargain and her fighting. She remembered even the black armor and her reluctance to wear it. And you called on Gerd before each encounter? Asked High Marshal Fallas, who had come up to listen.
I tried. I couldn't say it out loud.
Pox hoped he would say nothing more about it.
But you tried, you intended to.
Amberian's eyes held hers.
Yes, sir.
Pox looked away with an effort.
I tried, at least all the times I remember. That should be enough.
But his tone lacked conviction, and he looked across her to Ardheel.
I don't understand. What's the matter?
Even Pox could not be sure whether irritation or fear edged her voice. Fallas sighed. Poxenarian, you had no way to tell, but if you handled cursed weapons, and in a cursed cause, and that black armor was definitely cursed.
But I killed orcs, some Inisin, and they're all evil.
Yes, I know. That's why we think it may work out. Amberian shook his head, nonetheless.
I wish you hadn't touched those things.
But Pox felt ready to burst with the unfairness of it. She had been trapped, alone, captive, far underground. She had fought against many enemies and her own fear to survive. And now they said she should never have touched a weapon. I'm a fighter, after all, she told herself. What should I have done? Let them kill me without lifting a hand? Bitterness sharpened her voice. I thought Gerd would approve, fighting against odds like that.
Gerd does not care for odds, but for right and wrong.
Fallas sounded almost angry.
That's what we're trying to... Then should I have stood there like a trussed sheep and let them cut my throat?
Pox interrupted, angry enough now to say what she felt. Would you have been happier to find my corpse? By the gods, I thought Gerd was a warrior's patron in any fight against evil, and I did my best to fight. It's easy for you to say what I should and shouldn't have done, but you were safe in the sunlight, while I... Pox!
Amberian's voice and his hand on her arm stopped her.
Pox, please listen. We know you had little choice. We are not condemning you. You are not a paladin. We do not expect such wisdom from you. And now you are still weak and recovering from your injuries. We shouldn't have told you our worries, I suppose, but we did. I think myself that you will be all right when your wounds heal and you have rested. Eat well tonight and sleep. Tomorrow we need to move camp again and be on our way.
Pox stared at him, still a little angry, but appalled at her own words when she remembered them. Had she really spoken that way to a paladin and a high marshal?
I'm sorry, she said quietly. I don't know what...
Anyone, said Amberian firmly. Anyone coming from such an ordeal would be irritable. Can you walk as far as the fire to eat? Or shall we bring food here?
I'll try.
Pox was able to stand with Amberian's help and made it to the fire, walking stiffly, but alone. She said little to the others, concentrating on her own bowl of food. Master Balkan eyed her from across the fire, but said nothing. She wondered how much the others knew. She felt empty and sore inside, as if she'd been crying for a long time. After the meal, High Marshal Fallas asked Ardheel to tell the company about his experience. The elf smiled, sketched a gesture on the air, and began. Pox, listening, recovered a little of her first enchantment with elves. The intonations of his voice, even in the common tongue, gave it a lyrical quality. His graceful hands, gesturing fluidly, reminded her of tall grass blowing in the wind. He caught her eye and smiled. She felt her own face relax in response. The story he told, of being taken away on the flying steed they'd seen and feasting in the High King's hall, was strange enough. Pox was not sure whether Ardheel thought the High King was the same as their High Lord, or whether that was someone else entirely, but she did not ask. When he had finished, full darkness had fallen, and the stars glittered brightly out of a cloudless sky. Pox began to wonder if she could make it back to her place. She did not feel like moving again. Someone else began to talk with Ardheel. She was too sleepy to notice who it was. Then she was asleep, hardly rousing when someone draped a blanket over her. She roused again before dawn. One cheek was stiff with a cold wind that flowed down the canyon. The sky was pale green like a bruise. She could see both rock walls clear against the sky, but down in the canyon shadows hid all detail. She rolled her face inside the blanket and warmed the cold side of it with her breath. She felt stiff and sore, but much stronger than the day before. A horse whinnied. The sound echoed from the walls. Another one answered louder. Now several of them called. Pox thought she could pick out Sox's whinny from the rest. She pushed herself up. Cold air swirled under the blanket, and she knew she'd have to get up to get warm. A dark shape crouched over the fire, muttering. This morning she recognized one of the men-at-arms. When she came to the fire, he handed her a mug of sib, grinning.
"'Tis cold these early mornings," he said. "It must be the mountains. I've always heard it's cold all year round in mountains."
"That's true of the dwarf mounts," agreed Pox. She shivered and spread her hands to the flames. She had on a linen shirt over her trousers. The wind seemed to go through it, as if it weren't there. Where were her clothes? Which pack? As if he had heard her thought, Amberian dumped a pack beside the fire. "Your pack," he said, and reached for a mug of sib. "Glad you're up. We'll be riding today." Pox found a wool shirt to cover the linen one, then paused. "Should I wear mail?" "Yes. Better not take a chance. Oh, that's right. Yours is gone. We'll have to find you some." He finished his sib and stood up. Pox donned the wool shirt and unrolled her cloak. She was still cold. She moved around near the fire, trying to warm up. Gradually the stiffness eased, though she still felt a deep, aching pain along her bones.
It was much lighter. Someone had started a pot of porridge for breakfast. When she looked for the horses, she saw several men at work, hacking them up. Socks was still bare, tied to a scrubby tree. Pox walked toward him.
"Will you be riding him today?" asked one of the men.
"I suppose so." She had no idea what sort of trail they would take, but if they had to fight, she wanted socks. He stretched his neck when she neared him and bumped her with his massive nose. She rubbed his head and neck absently, scratching automatically those itchy spots he favored. The man reappeared with her saddle and gear. Pox thanked him and took her brush from the saddlebags. When she tried to lift the saddle to the horse's back, she was surprised to find she could barely get it in place. Every muscle in her back protested. She took a deep breath and fastened the rigging. Foregirth, breastband, crupper, rear girth, saddlebags. She was panting when she finished. Socks nosed at her. She fitted the bridle on his head and untied him. By the time they had ridden out of the canyon, onto a shoulder of the heights to one side, Pox felt she had been riding all day. Socks and the other horses toiled upward. Pox tried to take an interest in the country once more rising into view, the great cliffs of raw red stone, the fringe of forest on the plateaus above. Far to the north, an angular gray mountain, dark against all the red, caught Balkan's attention.
"There, see that dark one? Not the same rock at all. That one comes from hot rocks, rocks flowing like a river, all fire bright. It will be sharp to the feet if we come there."
"We shouldn't," said Amberian. "The map gives us a cross canyon next, deeper than the last, and Luop's stronghold is somewhere nearby."
"Nearby, eh?" grumbled the dwarf. "Nearby in this country can be out of reach."
They were riding now through a little meadow of sand, carpeted with tall lupines in shades of cream and gold. Ahead, the trail led toward a curious spire of rock that looked to Pox as if it were made of candle drippings that had been tilted one way and another while still soft.